Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
John chapter 13, verses 31 through 35. When he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God must also glorify him in himself and will glorify him at once. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another."
Some of you are more aware of this whole building than others, so I want to share that one of the privileges I experience is arriving here very early a lot of mornings, Monday through Friday. And what's happening then is that Artenia Beast Academy of Play and Whimsy, which is the preschool, is in session. And the gravity of love is really present, and I feel it as moms and dads and grandparents drop off their children for school. And I come in the door, and I'm walking down the hall, and I hear over and over again, "I love you. I love you. Me too, Daddy. Will you come back?" "Yes, I will come back. I love you, Meredith. Are we having supper?" "Yes, we're having supper. I love you." All of the questions. It is just a beautiful reminder of how important it is from our very beginnings to be loved, but also to love another person. It may not be a surprise, but I've been looking forward to this worship series for a while. Is connecting love with God and the church feels so important, and if there is any opportunity to try and make that work, I'm fully in. Behind me, you see our new installation. Eric Castellanos is one of our artists in residence, and I just want to say a word about it. It's you can look at it, but it's also to be interacted with, and so I say it because you have to break the plane, you know, of fear to come to the altar. So for some of us, it's not that big, but for others of us, just stepping up there feels scary. So you have, everyone, you have permission, all right? And what you see behind me are some very beautiful invitations as you go through worship today and in the coming weeks to either write on the mirror messages of love. There are sticky notes If, as you are thinking about it during your prayer time, something about love comes up for you, and on the right-hand side, just so you know, this is a gift that Eric painted for his wife. And depending on where you sit, it looks really dark, or you see a lot more. So I also encourage you to take your time, move around the sanctuary, and in the box in front of it, they very bravely have put their love letters to each other. So that's what's in the box. We don't have permission to open those. But we are in the presence of them, right? It's a very beautiful gift he has given all of us as we work on this series of love. The other thing undergirding it is a book that we appreciate called The Way of Love, written by a man named Norman Wiersbe, who's a professor of theology at Duke Divinity School. Dr. Wiersbe's writing has become formative for me, really, as I seek to grow in faith and to wonder how the church can become like a training ground for loving one another as Jesus loved his disciples. This book that he wrote was really important to Matt and I as we wrote our book, Growing in Faith. And we go back to it very, very often. Sometimes I especially go back when I'm dreamy and happy and thinking, wow, this is amazing. It's really working. And then I go back to it when I'm feeling really challenged or discouraged and I question the relevance of anything and everything we do here in both of those directions. Dr. Wiersbe holds up the importance of love. I want to share with you how the book opens. Does Christianity still matter? That's his question. Aren't we better off without this archaic religion and its sectarian squabbles and divisive politics? Why even bother with God when it's clear that the idea of God is the basis for so much pain and hurt in the world? I will argue, he writes, that the Christian faith can and should be taken seriously. Christianity matters because it reveals the deep mysteries of God and the meaning of all life. The answer is surprisingly and profoundly simple for us. Christianity reveals the life of God and therefore also the meaning of life as a way of love. God, life, and love. These three are indispensable for a good and beautiful world, he says. And without these three together, everything falls apart. That's the heart of Christianity, and that is the message we most need to recover. So God, life, and love. It just sounds so good. So why then, all week as I was writing this message, does Charles Schulz's timeless comic strip keep coming back to me? You, a doctor, ha, that's a big laugh. You could never be a doctor. You know why? Says Lucy. Because you don't love mankind. We know when this was written. That's why. And he says, I love mankind. It's people I can't stand. I just kept thinking about it. I had to dig around in the archives, but it's all over Pinterest. Seriously, people can be really, really difficult. And I think Jesus actually had quite a clue about this. Usually, as Pastor Matt reminds us, Jesus speaks like at a slant. It's hard for us sometimes to get it, but not this time. Maybe Jesus spoke so plainly, as we heard Seska read, because he knew what Charles Schulz came to know, that people can be really difficult. Because in the midst of God and life and love, Jesus gave the disciples a new command. I give you this new commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Like those long ago disciples, job is to figure out what it looks like to live this out, to become proficient in the ways of love. We need a sympathetic and supportive community helping us all along our way. You can't do it by yourself. We need to be part of that community, and we need to take risks and succeed and fail and try again. We need to love and be loved. We need to practice loving until we become proficient at it. Christian faith is an existential commitment or a personal promise to perceive and live our life in the kinds of ways that Jesus inspires and makes possible for us. And just to be clear, proficiency does not mean mastery, okay? Those are not the same things. Proficiency means to be highly functional. Like a person is proficient at speaking another language other than their heart language. Like if you're proficient, you can get around, right? In that other place where that language, second language is needed. You can operate. You can do the money. You can do the transportation. You're proficient. For most of us, this doesn't happen overnight. You don't become proficient overnight. So the way of love here at the table, we want to share it with folks. The way we do it here is in a circle. We first invite you, or hope that you will try, to root your life in grace through coming to worship. When you're ready, which you heard me this morning, we invite you to join a growing in faith group for 6 weeks or a retreat. There you learn more about what our kitchen tables are like. And when you're ready to practice, then it's time for you to join a kitchen table so you can watch over one another in love. And as you live into this process, then you find creative ways to be reaching in love. The piece that's not on there, because Matt's away and I don't know how to work putting extra words on the screen, is, it's true. Hey, I am not proficient at this. Giving generously out of that whole process. We learn to give of ourselves generously. This is how Christianity is best understood, as a training ground in the ways of love, at least here. And every week, we invite people into this process. And some people jump right in, almost too fast, right? Others take their time. Some come in thinking they already know how to do this. They've been doing it, so they don't need any of this. It's interesting. And some never try it at all, right? Some never try it at all. The ways of love, they aren't easy, and it can get a little bit bumpy. So let me just tell you a little bit how bumpy. When you heard that text that Seska read, the context of it is not readily apparent. The first clue I'm going to give you about this text is that usually we read it during Holy Week. And we read it in a bigger form on Maundy Thursday, which is the night we celebrate the Last Supper of Jesus with his disciples. So why is that important to know? Because this new commandment to love from Jesus comes right after Judas leaves to betray him. That's when he says it. John's gospel reads, "And it was night." And then we hear what Seska read. The gospel of John always refers to night or the dark as our location when we don't know God. So Judas leaves and it was night. And if that doesn't make this commandment bumpy enough for us, the passage comes also right before Jesus predicts Peter's triple denial. Jesus has washed their feet. He has broken bread with them. And in the midst of the people who think they love him the best, who would not be able, like, in the end, to stay with them, many of them, he gives this teaching. I think it's a stunning location. Maybe bumpy is an understatement, actually. Because that's how hard love really is. You say it when someone's going to betray you and someone's going to deny you, and you keep on loving. I love humankind. It's people I can't stand, right? I believe we can trust this teaching of Jesus because I don't think he's making it up. Because Jesus lived and Jesus loved. And he's in solidarity with our human experience of loving and of being loved. And he knew, even as he was uttering this command, just how difficult love could be. Think about it. From his mother, Mary, insisting that he start into ministry, to the death of his beloved friend Lazarus, to Judas's abandonment, to Peter's denial of what Jesus knew Peter really could be capable of, Jesus really gets it. If we hear John 13, 31 to 35, as the lectionary has us hear it today, lifted out of that setting of his real life and our own, then we risk turning Christianity into a love that's like shallow. It's a love without the deep truth. And that would be love without flesh on it, the incarnation of Jesus. Because love really can't be love if there is no sacrifice. Love can't be love if there is no hurting. Sorry if that's news to anyone. If there are never tears, it's probably really not love. Real love knows what it is on the other side of its most fulfilling, most breathtaking moments. They come to that most fulfilling because it's come through sacrifice. And as hard as that is to comprehend or to be willing to take in, I actually hope that's a comfort to us. I said earlier, I just returned from a gathering of folks who were talking and listening to others' stories about why they think we should or should not continue with the United Methodist connection and move it forward. It was beautiful, and it was also heartbreaking. There are many stories. There are two such meetings happening last week and this week, and Matt's going to the one in Kansas City later today. He leaves. Just to be clear, we are crashing these meetings. We weren't invited. So when I said that, the woman said, I'm going to write down walk-in. I said, okay, that works. The reason it was beautiful and heartbreaking is people spoke the truth in love. It was side by side. It was heartbreaking because so many have been wounded by the very church that is supposed to practice the love command. We did a process called open space. I won't go into all of the details, but we ran it ourselves, over 300 people. It was hard and good work. And even though my heart breaks, my sadness and grief for my church is not going to have the last word. There are creative people wondering in love how we can move forward, because true love is real love. And it is love that is felt so deeply that we are compelled to imagine a future in which we are not the same, but we're changed in and through loving and being loved. One of the themes that kept coming up around tables of conversation is, you know, we look back and we inherited this church, and we look back at history and we think, Martin Luther nailed some things in the Protestant Reformation on theses on a church door. We read about it in history. What if this time, right now, is our threshold moment of really shifting? It's scary. It's easier to look back in history books and say, oh yeah, this is what happened. But right now we are God's loving people trying to figure out how to love God, each other, and Jesus sacrificially. So I don't think it's an editing mistake the way this passage is in the Bible. This command is placed actually perfectly into what scholars call Jesus's huge farewell discourse. Everything about this section tells us things are going to change for Jesus and his followers. He's going to turn himself in next in John's gospel. Jesus will be arrested then. He'll be tried. He'll be convicted. He'll be executed. He will leave the disciples. And even though, as the gospel of John reminds us, his leaving is to prepare an abiding place for them with God and with himself, he's still leaving. And they're still not ready. Transitions suck. They are hard. I do not like them. And like many of you, I avoid them if I can. I turn away from them. I don't like to go into those hard changing places when I don't know the rules anymore. Maybe that's a little like Judas and a little like being Peter. Norman Wiersbe writes about it like this. When people are muddled about love, they gradually lose the sympathies to recognize each other's needs and pains and the imagination to envision each other's flourishing, the commitment to work patiently with others to help them realize their potential, and the joy that cherishes and celebrates the goodness that others are. This love commandment is said into all of our human messiness, into our fears. And a biblical scholar, Caroline Lewis, reminded me this week, it is a love that's aware of challenges. But most of all, it's a love that loves anyway, even with that awareness. A love that knows what it is getting itself into and loves abundantly. This week, I got an email from a person who has attended the table from time to time. Recently, they brought one of their adult children into worship. And these are their words. I've changed it a little bit. This is what it said. My adult child is just coming back to church after years of absence and through a divorce. Their final church experience was being asked to leave the staff because they refused to sign something against LGBTQIA folks. I, this is a parent, was so proud of her, but sad at the same time. To be proud and sad at the same time is how hard it is to love. To accompany your child back to church after they have been rejected and wounded because you know the capacity of God's love is greater than the smallness that can be presented as God's love. Love one another as I have loved you, so also you should love one another. So let's not forget that last clause, making it easier on ourselves. So you'll hear a lot of people say, Jesus said, love one another as I've loved you. The next part, so you should love one another. We leave that off. Jesus isn't going to let us off the hook. The demand for us to have love for one another is integral to his love for us. I think another way of saying that is Jesus' love for us makes it possible to imagine loving one another, right? Because he has loved us, we can imagine loving ourselves and others. Just think about that. If you happen to be a person whose parents loved you, and you get to that place where you think, I loved how they loved me. I think I want to love a child like that. That's what I'm trying to say. The direction is outward, into the world. This is love that actually is for the sake of the whole world. Let me just share a little bit more from Norman Wiersbe. To learn to love, you have to practice with other people who are committed to inspire you when you are tired, celebrate you when you succeed, and comfort you when you fail. So, yeah. Maybe this is old news, but I learned that more than 560 of Charles Schulz Peanuts newspaper strips, of which there are 17,800, okay? That's a lot. 17,800. More than 560 contain a religious, spiritual, or theological reference. To put this into perspective, he only produced 61 that had Lucy pulling the football. But we remember that, right? But 560 that in some way talked about our human condition and about love and about how hard it is to love. And particularly later in Charles Schulz's career, the religious references came so frequently that pastors regularly wrote permission to reprint them. And he almost always granted it. It was his way of teaching us about love. Jesus came into the midst of us, into the midst of humankind, and he loved us so that we will find our way into loving each other. So may we, these 3 weeks in this new series on love, may we hold the tension of how hard it really is with the beauty. That's what I see in Eric's painting here. The tension of the beauty and the darkness. The beauty of how it can be as we come to full bloom as God's table, God's people, open to everyone.
This my evening song, where my help comes from.
This is the gravity of love, just as the moon follows the sun, though all the while.